Welcome to Just a Minute. Thank you. Hello, my name is Nicholas Parsons, and as the minute waltz fades away, once more it is my huge pleasure to welcome our many listeners in this country, throughout the world, on the internet, wherever you're tuned in, and also to welcome to the show four talented, exciting, experienced, and resourceful players of the game. We have on my right Paul Merton and Kit Hesketh-Harvey, and on my left I've got Ross Noble and Steve Frost, who once more are going to pit their wits, their verbal ingenuity and dexterity, as they try and speak on the subject that I give them, and they try and do that without hesitation, repetition, or deviating from the subject. And that first laugh and a round of applause we got was not for me. It was for two members of my audience who couldn't decide to wait and stand at the side. They had to work their way in the middle of the center row so that my concentration lapsed. And however successful they are, there were game points or lose points according to with their challenge. Beside me sits Claire Bartley, who's going to help me keep the score, and she'll blow a whistle when 60 seconds are up. And this particular edition of Just a Minute is coming from the Picture Playhouse Cinema in Beverley, in that delightful Yorkshire town. And we have in front of us a lovely Yorkshire audience who are part of the Beverley Comedy Festival. They're going to cheer us on our way and enjoy the show. We begin this week with Ross Noble. Ross, the subject is, what goes on backstage? That's the subject. Tell us something about it in this game, starting now.
People backstage have many different rituals. I personally like to sacrifice a goat. This can cause quite a lot of problems as blood squirts everywhere. Nicholas prefers a game of cards, and it really can spoil things as I stand there at my altar, dressed in my robes, my big chicken's claws hanging from the side of my ears as I spin round, summoning up the Dark Lord himself. Who would have thought a Satan looms across this cinema? People trying to watch movies. Stop, stop, go away.
Oh, yes, if you go for dramatic emphasis, it overplays it and you can't do it in just a minute. So, Paul, you challenge, yes.
A repetition of stop. A
stop, yes, unfortunately, because they were enjoying it so much. But it was a correct challenge. And you have a point for that, Paul, and as also means that you not only had a point, but you take over the subject, which is what goes on backstage, and there are 26 seconds available starting now.
Well, as Ross says, it's not very interesting. You tend to sort of sit around playing cards, or maybe often backstage isn't very nice at all, because the management of theatres reckon that if the public can't see it, there's no point in spending money on it. Even at the London Palladium, the mecca of light entertainment, you would imagine that perhaps backstage would be lavish. It isn't, although Yul Brynner in 1976 did have a red carpet installed so he could walk from the stage.
In this game, whoever is speaking when the whistle goes gains an extra point. On this occasion was Paul Merton, so at the end of that round he has got 2 points. In fact, is anyone to have any points at all? So, Kit Hesketh-Harvey, will you take the next round? Oh, a topical one, the Humber Bridge. Tell us something about the Humber Bridge in this game, starting now.
I came across the Humber Bridge on my way here tonight, and what a fabulous erection it is, spanning as it does the two major conurbations of Bartleby Le Wold and Kirk Ella, combined population possibly 16, but why does it have to be so inordinately, historically, extortionately expensive? £5 there and back. You can practically get a Fuerteventura for that, or even nicer, have a night of lust with Nicholas Parsons giving you every kind of pleasure. Still, it is marvellous because it leads to this gorgeous town of Beverley with its super minster, terribly undersung and otherwise neglected, because I believe the Humber Bridge was supposed to be part of a motorway that went all the way up the East Coast. It was never built, with the result that nobody comes here at all. Until now, these people have been the forgotten folk of the East Riding. Now Nicholas Parsons has come... Oh, no!
Oh, It just serves you right, but try to have a go at Nicholas Parsons all the time. There we are. So, who channeled it? It was Paul, wasn't it?
Yeah, you can't believe it, but it's a repetition of Nicholas Parsons. The subject being the Humber Bridge, but Nicholas Parsons was mentioned twice.
I know it was mentioned twice. I mean, some people say you can't mention it too often, but...
They do.
But you, in this game, of course, you can, and that was repetition. So, Paul, you have a correct challenge. And after he went so magnificently, 4:53. This is the irony of this game. He gives you that pleasure. He goes so consistently well with great style and plumb. He gets absolutely nothing for it. I was about to use a much more explicitly crude word than that, but I thank goodness I didn't, because it's Radio 4. And 7 seconds are available for Paul on the Humber Bridge, starting now.
Many years ago, when the Humber Bridge was first being discussed, a prominent councillor stood on his hind legs and said at a meeting...
You were about to be challenged for him standing on his hind legs.
I know.
But you got going. You weren't interrupted. You get going. In fact, at the end of the round, you not only got a point in the round, but another one speaking the whistle went. Paul, in this particular show, you're the only one to have scored so far. Steve Frost, will you take the next round? And the subject is the snood. I think it's been chosen especially for you, hasn't it? Tell us something about the snood, starting now.
If you're looking for cheap Christmas gifts for your nieces or maybe your daughters or perhaps your aunties and daughters and grand...
Ross Charles.
Repetition of daughters.
Yes, there were too many daughters. Yeah. Yes, I don't know if it's part of your life or not. I don't know, but... Ross, you had a correct challenge. You have 52 seconds. You tell us something about the snood, starting now.
I am a very lazy man, and because of that, I only ever eat super noodles. But so I can't actually be bothered to say the words that of that particular product, so I've shortened them down to snood. That's a new hybrid thing. Hello there. I'd like snood, please, and I'll pour some hot water on top of them and enjoy them in a large bowl.
Steve Ross, challenge.
Repetition, two thems.
Yes.
I enjoy them, I pour hot water on them.
You haven't won many friends with that challenge.
Well, you're not getting any snoods for Christmas.
Yeah. It's what we call a tough challenge, but a correct one. So, Steve, you have 30 seconds on the snood, starting now.
There is a legend that on Beverly Westwood, the creature called the snood lives. He crosses the race course and trips over horses as they come up the final furlong. That will be the snood what tripped over that one.
Kit challenge.
Repetition of over.
That's right, yes.
Sorry.
No, what do you mean you're sorry? It was a correct challenge. Why
are you... I was about to do him on trips, and then I said, it was...
So, you've got a point for a correct challenge, Kit, and you have the snood, and you have 17 seconds starting now.
The lassie lost her silken snood is a Scottish euphemism for mislaying one's maidenhead.
Paul, you challenge.
Yeah, hesitation.
It was hesitation, because he didn't quite know how to put it into delicate terms. Is that right? Paul, another correct challenge and another point and 10 seconds. The snood is starting now.
Has there ever been a time when the snood was in fashion? Well, the answer is yes. If we go back to the 19th century, and I'm thinking of 1878, Disraeli wore a snood.
Paul Merton was again speaking when the whistle went. Gained that extra point. And for those interested in the point system, Paul at the end of that round has got 6 points, and the other three have all got one each. So they're all equal in second place. But it's early days. Paul, it's your turn to begin. The subject is going to the cinema. How apt when we're doing this show from this beautiful cinema in Beverly. The oldest working cinema in the country, for those interested in the history of the cinema. I should just throw that in because the people of Beverly asked me to do it. You have 60 seconds as usual, starting now.
Going to the cinema is a marvellous experience. Some of my earliest memories in life involve going to the cinema. I remember seeing Carry On Jack around about 1963, one of the lesser films in that canon, but I also saw a Tony Hancock movie called The Punch and Judy Man, which was a bit of a morose film.
Steve Ross, challenge.
Hesitation.
Yes, I agree with the hesitation, Steve. So you have a point, you have the subject. 43 seconds available. Going to the cinema, starting now.
The lights go down, the chocolates come out, the screen lights up.
Dramatic pause. Dramatic pause.
Thank you. Thank you for understanding that, Paul.
Yes. That's the trouble of just a minute. You can't make dramatic pauses or dramatic repetitions.
Oh, now you tell me. I'm an actor, you know.
You have played the game before, Steve, with panache, but... Right, Ross, you challenge? What is your
challenge? Hesitation.
Hesitation, right, Ross. Tell us something about going to the cinema, 39 seconds, starting now.
In the old days, you could walk in and watch Pearl and Dean appear on the screen with their lovely music. Pearl and Dean were...
that was quite...
challenge. Yes.
Repetition of Pearl and Dean.
Rubbish.
32 seconds, with you, Paul. Going to the cinema, starting now.
Undoubtedly, the greatest moment of my professional career so far happened about 2 years ago when I went to a cinema in Soho. I directed a film called The Suicidal Dog, which Steve Frost was in, playing the part of Philippe, the strong man, and he was very good. And as I...
Ross challenged.
Sorry, you said Steve was very good in an... I panicked and pressed. I'm sorry.
It didn't sound right.
You can see the love that exists between them all, but it isn't. It's the keenness. So it was an incorrect challenge, Paul. You have another point, and you have 16 seconds going to the cinema now.
And for me, working in comedy, I think it's the ultimate thrill, a movie. Television is great, radio...
Have you had a movie before?
No, cinema before. I didn't mention the word movies before.
I thought two,
I said film.
Two goes... Oh,
films.
Did you? I'm so sorry.
I didn't mention the word movie. Right, 11 seconds, Paul, still with you, going to the cinema, starting
There's
now.
There's something about...
Steve Frost challenge.
I just realised I've not been paid for that film.
Nobody's been paid.
Sorry, I just thought I'd bring that
there. I had to fork up £3,000 to get it finished.
Do you want a bonus point for the reaction you got from
I'll
that robot?
If you've got more, I'll have them.
Well, give him one, come on. He's
thank you.
He loves getting his bonus points. So, but Paul gets a point for being interrupted. And he has the subject still, and 10 seconds available, going to the cinema, starting now.
If you ever get the chance to see Charlie Chaplin, The Gold Rush, with a live orchestra, it is the most extraordinary experience, because it is a silent...
Steve Frost, Charles.
I'm going to go for repetition of experience.
Yes, you had the experience before. Well, listen, Steve, a point for that. And you've got in cleverly with 3 seconds to go, which is about your limit, I think. I couldn't resist that. But
you got me. You got through that one.
Right, 3 seconds. Take a deep breath, Steve. Going to the cinema, starting now.
Going to the cinema is probably one of the most exciting things one can possibly do.
So Steve Ross was then speaking, and the whistle went and gained an extra point for doing so. And with the others in their run, he's now in a strong second place, not far behind our leader.
Did you really not get paid for that? Really? Did you not get paid?
No, nothing.
I imagine he did get paid, but it was a very good line with it at that particular moment. The audience
No, I don't
laughed.
Think anybody got paid. I'm just wondering who got all the money.
I mean, that man will... Frost will say anything to get a laugh, you know that. Anyway, don't...
That's not true, huh?
He's actually... You can't see from where you are, but he's actually wearing clown shoes. Oh, no, they're his real shoes.
So let's leave our private lives out of this and get back to just a minute. And, Kit, your turn to begin. Oh, what a pun this is. What? The subject in front of me is Kit Cars. Yes, it's a bit of a bad joke, but isn't it? Someone's thought of it for Kit Hesketh Harvey. Speak on it if you can, Kit. 60 seconds starting now.
Yes, I get an awful lot of this. Strange nerd-like people shuffle up to me and say, I am a Kit Car enthusiast. Would you like to recycle the clapped-up Mondeo in the lay-by in the A164 and turn it into a Maserati simply with sticky-back plastic and a kidney from a Turkish organ donor? The result much more resembles the heaps of junk that Craig Charles shouts at until they're interesting on Robot Wars. But I cannot be doing with them. What happened if you have a crash? The whole thing collapses like the bog rolls it's probably entirely fashioned from. I've stopped. It's sort of conked out.
Ross, you were the first to challenge.
Hesitation.
Yes, sorry, yeah. Yes. I have to hear it just in case
you're
at a different
trouble
one.
With Kit Cars. They just sort of conked out, really.
So we stop. We call that hesitation. 24 seconds with you, Ross, on kit cars starting now.
Imagine the nightmare of getting your kit car home and assembling it only to find out it's a wardrobe. Oh, the embarrassment of turning up at the local raceway with your fantastic IKEA purchase. You would have to move aside all the coats and old bits of bric-a-brac which you'd put in there, or possibly you could convert them into a fashionable spoiler as you race.
So Ross Noble kept going to the whistle and gained that extra point. And he's now equal in the lead with Paul Merton, followed by Steve Frost and Kit Hesketh Harvey. And Steve, it's your turn to begin. The subject now, oh, an erudite one, calculus. Tell us something about calculus. I'm sure...
I just thought I'd buzz now.
I thought he'd been specially chosen for him because he's a latent mathematician or something. But anyway, Steve, this is the subject in front of me. It's your turn to begin, so you have to take it. And you have 60 seconds as usual, starting now.
Captain Haddock runs into the room. Tintin's asleep.
Poor talent.
Repetition of tin.
Oh. Oh.
I didn't do it. Yeah, that's it. You play the game.
That's the only card I had on that one.
Right, you wouldn't have to play the game, and there you are. You're caught by 58 seconds. Perhaps you're pleased to have lost it. I don't know, Steve. Anyway,
let's hear from you, Paul,
on calculus starting now.
There are many different forms of calculus. The one I'm familiar with may be unfamiliar to some of you out there. First of all, it's an algebraic equation. If A equals X, then Y must be similar to W. What this means in real life is a tractor, which is coming towards you at 14 miles an hour, to an Eskimo, will be seen to be coming at you. Oh, no.
Ross.
Sir.
Good challenge, yes.
Repetition,
yes. What?
Coming at you.
That's right, yes, correct, yes. I have to be sure you know. Right, so there we are, so 34 seconds coming at you. Calculus starting now.
Calculus was the most rubbish gladiator that ever lived. The people of Rome would stand up and shout, "Don't put Calculus into the ring. He doesn't draw his sword and bring blood out of people. He's just counting all the time, and sometimes he'll lay out a big piece of checkered paper on the floor in which to help him with that." And he didn't have calculator. I'm still going.
Hesitation.
Yes, I agree. Hesitation, yes. Let's hear from you. So everybody's talking on calculus, and it's now Kit's turn. 10 seconds available, Kit, starting now.
I'm extremely reluctant to take up this subject because I was terribly bad at calculus at school. I remember something about an antiderivative function.
Paul Chalmers.
Well, give it to somebody who knows what they're talking about. I'll have it.
But I think you've demonstrated you don't know what you're talking about.
I made a mistake on coming towards. I rubbed it out and I carried on.
No, he hasn't deviated, so he has 4 seconds to continue on calculus, Kit, starting now.
The farm machinery is heading towards the Centurion, but it depends on the integrated integer density.
So, Kit Hesketh Harvey was speaking of us, and when gained that extra point, he has leapt forward. He's still in fourth place, but he's only 1 point behind Steve Frost. A few points behind our equal leaders, Ross Noble and Paul Merton. And you needn't look at Kit as if I didn't know, because I did at mathematics university, and I know about the integral calculus and the differential calculus and the difference between
perhaps
the
two. Perhaps you could explain it to the good folk of Beverly.
Nicholas, why not, as a one-off, it's 35 years of just a minute, why not take the subject of calculus and see if you can speak for a minute about hesitation, repetition...
Calculus differentiates into two different things. There's the differential calculus and the integral calculus, and they are mathematical terms which will give you a great insight into this great and mystical world of maths. Also, calculus can be the kidney stones that you have, the remains that get into your kidneys and so forth. It is because it's a residue. Now, mathematically speaking, there are different terms that you can use in terms of the reason that I'm speaking for, I suppose. So I went for 33 seconds and nobody challenged me.
But to hand it to you, nobody can touch you.
Yes. I'm glad you don't.
You are one of a kind.
Imagine if you'd done 35 seconds for the 35 years. How amazing would that have been?
35 years, right. Anyway, it was thrown at me, and my mind was tuned in to being a chairman and not to being a competitor. So
it was excellent, I thought.
We thought it was marvellous.
Right.
In fact, we'd like to hear it again, wouldn't we?
Let me give you the score at the end of that round. I've told you, give me the score once, right. Paul Merton, it's your turn to begin. And the subject is second-hand car salesman. Second-hand, it's been written a rather fine, it's been written as three different words. Second-hand car salesman. Second-hand car salesman, right. That's the subject. 60 seconds starting now.
Never buy a second-hand car salesman. You don't know where they've been. A lot of them have been welded together. In fact, there's two of them. You'll find one second-hand car salesman at the top, and the arse belongs to somebody completely different. I had a second-hand car salesman at home, and you couldn't trust him at all because he would fall to bits. He'd be sitting there watching the television, and suddenly the back end would fall off. You'd pick it up, shove it.
Ross, no real challenge.
Was it a repetition of back?
No, we had arse and back.
That's right, yes. Sorry, but Ross, incorrect challenge. Paul's taken another point and going to the lead in 39 seconds. Second-hand car salesman starting now.
Well, they don't rank very highly in the public perception, do they? They're round about journalists and estate agents. Second-hand car salesmen can be rather dodgy characters because if you bow into a showroom... I thought I'd chuck a bit of a slice landing.
Right, Kit, you challenged.
I challenged because of deviation from sense.
From
bow into...
Yes, bow into a show.
And a bit of hesitation, too.
From language or words as we understand them. Mm. Right, do you have another point, Kit, and you have 27 seconds. Tell us something about second-hand car salesmen starting now.
We Kit car owners assume that the class went out of motoring when the dashboard started to incorporate digital clocks. What you must look for is a second-hand car salesman who will put those little windy things on a proper dial clock that will tell you what it is.
Poor challenge.
Repetition of clock.
Yes, he had the clock before, yes. Paul, you have 11 seconds, a correct challenge. Second-hand car salesman is back with you, starting now.
One of the worst experiences of my life happened in Birmingham in 1978. I'd recently passed my driving test, and I went into this garage, and I said to the second-hand car salesman, I...
And we'll never know what he said to the second-hand car salesman. Do you remember what you said?
No, I made it up. Everything I say is rubbish. I shouldn't really say that as a tactic.
Paul Merton is in the lead as we go into the final round. So, Paul Merton's just in the lead, just ahead of Ross Noble, and in third place equals Steve Frost and Kit Hesketh-Harvey. And Ross, it's your turn to begin. And the subject is Raining Cats and Dogs. A fascinating expression. Tell us about it in this game, starting now.
When it's raining very heavily, people say it's raining cats and dogs. Just a mild drizzle, they like to say it's raining gerbils and hamsters.
Right. They like to say what? I didn't quite hear it.
It's raining gerbils and hamsters.
That was rather sweet, but Steve challenged me before.
Repetition of say. People say...
I know. It was repetition, yes. But I wanted to hear the joke. And it didn't.
But it goes on the radio, Nicholas. You can hear it then.
I was trying to think of a response to say, but I'd like to use it before that, but I don't think it's very funny, so I won't say it.
It goes out on the radio.
Did you think you were on television?
I thought we were auditioning for Jobbers Ushers.
I'm surprised you thought it was television wearing the sweater that you've got on. But, Steve, you challenged, and it was a repetition, and you have a correct challenge, and you have 53 seconds. Raining cats and dogs, starting now.
The expression raining cats and dogs comes from Cornwall and the old tin mine workers. When the rain came down...
Ross challenged.
He said tin earlier.
I know.
Tin.
That was in another round.
Now, give us a break, guys.
Don't worry, he's got a break. He'll get a point for that, an incorrect challenge. He said tin in another round.
Sorry, I was being mischievous.
I know you were, and we enjoyed it. And you gave, a result of your mischievous ways, you gave Steve another point, and he has 47 seconds to tell us more about raining cats and dogs, starting now.
In 1947, in Scarborough, it did actually rain, literally, cats and dogs. The local kennel and cattery got blown up into the sky by a fierce wind coming off the sea, and it all landed down on the castle and made such weird noises, such as woof!
Ross, you challenge.
If I'm not having the noises, no.
So your challenge.
There was a slight hesitation.
There was a slight hesitation, yes. And anyway, if it was a cattery, what were the dogs doing there? That's what...
It's only pretend, Nicholas.
Could have been on holidays.
Visiting friends.
So, lunch.
There are many reasons.
But the cats weren't there because they were at the mousery.
So, Ross, you have a correct challenge. You have 30 seconds. Tell us something about raining cats and dogs, starting now.
If somebody runs into a pub and says, "It's raining cats and dogs," Rolf Harris belts for the door because he feels that his services are required down at the animal hospital. He gathers up the splints. He gathers up cushions.
I know, but it is part of the game. Kit, you challenge?
Repetition of gathers up.
Gathers up, correct, Kit. And you have 16 seconds. Tell us something about raining cats and dogs, starting now.
In the Midwest of America, it rains Judy Garland and Munchkins when the tornadoes come down. I suppose the raining dogs at the moment must be corgis, although Princess Anne's bull terrier is giving them a very good run for their money. The expression is a bizarre one. I was sitting watching Lord of the Rings and getting DVT.
So, Kit Heskett Harvey was speaking as the whistle went and brought that round to an end, and also the show to a close, and he did it with a delightful climax. And I'll just give you the final situation for those interested in the point situation. Kit Heskett Harvey and Steve Frost finished equal in third place, but they were only a point or two behind Ross Noble, and Ross was only 2 points behind Paul Merton. So, Paul, we say, within the rules of this game, you were our winner. Congratulations. So it only remains for me to say thank you to our four delightful and talented players of the game. Paul Merton, Kit Heskett Harvey, Ross Noble and Steve Frost. Also, I think Claire Bartlett, who's helped me keep the score. She's blown a whistle with supreme delicacy whenever the 60 seconds was up. We thank our producer and director, Claire Jones. We are indebted to Ian Messiter, who thought of this game, which we enjoy playing. And we are very grateful to this lovely Yorkshire audience here in the Picture Playhouse Cinema. Who have been so delightful as they've cheered us on our way. From our lovely audience and from me, Nicholas Parsons, and from our panel, goodbye until the next time you tune in and you listen to Just a Minute.